This is Family Policy Matters. This program is produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council, a pro-family research and education organization dedicated to strengthening and preserving the family. And now from the studio, here's John Rustin, president of the North Carolina Family Policy Council.
Thank you for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. It is our pleasure to have Paul Davies with us on the program. Paul is editor of the website getgovernmentoutofgambling.org and the Maggie Walker Fellow at the Institute for American Values. He is a journalist who has worked at the Wall Street Journal and the Philadelphia Inquirer, among others. A series of editorials he wrote on casino gambling was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize in 2009. Paul is with us to talk about government-sponsored gambling, how it harms society and individuals, and why the government should get out of the gambling business. Paul, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Well, we appreciate your time. Now, you have described the government as the, and I quote, chief enabler of the gambling industry. What role have state governments played in helping to spur the increase in gambling that we are seeing across the United States today? And if you would, give us some examples of the types of gambling being promoted by state governments.
Sure. I mean, you know, going back in history, you know, we only had one state that had casinos. That was Nevada. And after that, we had casinos in Atlantic City. But, you know, since then, there's been probably about half the states in the country have now legalized casinos. And we wouldn't have all the casinos in the country without each state government. And it's basically been a joint effort between mainly the casino interests that go in there with their influence and money in the state houses, and they're very influential there, and basically flood the states with a lot of campaign contributions and lobbyists to push their cause and agenda. And, you know, the states are hard-pressed to come up with new sources of revenue, so I understand that. And they have turned to gambling as a way, as they say, an easy way to make money, at least on the front end, without having to raise taxes. But it's a very short-sighted policy because the gambling causes nothing but problems, the long-term problems that you know, you may get some short-term gains from the revenue, tax revenue that the casinos pay, but you have a lot of social and economic problems down the road.
Certainly. Well, state-sponsored lotteries, in addition, are a common form of government-promoted gambling, in addition to the casinos. And 37 states, including North Carolina, currently have lotteries. Now, the lottery was sold to North Carolina, as you have suggested, as a source of revenue for education specifically. Despite these claims, however, there is an ongoing debate about whether or not that lottery revenue is actually going to education, in addition to the money that the government was already allocating for educational costs. Why do you believe that the lottery is a bad source of revenue for the states?
This is a sort of classic accounting gimmick that all states do whenever they're trying to promote gambling. So whether it's the lottery or the casino, they always tie it to feel-good causes. You know, it's going to be for education. It's going to be for senior services. You know, they're usually the two that they tie it to. But, you know, at the end of the day, in the studies and statistics show that it doesn't result in a massive increase in new money for education or for seniors or whatever your cause is that they want to tie it to. What it does is, you know, it basically the money may go to education, but it just means less money from the general fund goes to education. So it's not like you get this overwhelming influx of money that makes your schools better. And in fact, the states that have adopted both the lotteries and the casinos, so the studies show that it's not a reliable source of revenue over time. And it often, you know, while it will spike, it often sort of plateaus out and begins to decline. And it forces the state to come up and develop usually new forms of gambling to basically generate and replace the loss of the money. So it's a bad public policy to try and rely on stripping wealth from people, and basically usually the most vulnerable people, to try and fund your government and take advantage of those people rather than come up with something that grows the economic pie rather than strips wealth from the very citizens elected officials take an oath to protect.
Well, there are currently about 500 casinos in the United States, including approximately 260 Indian-run casinos. Now, casino gambling is not always something that we would typically associate with government-sponsored gambling, but that seems to be rapidly changing in our country. States are becoming more enmeshed with gambling interests through the approval of what is referred to as regional casinos, which are often the result of gambling agreements or compacts with Indian tribes. What specific role have state governments played in the spread of these regional casinos in the United States?
Well, the Indian casino is a little bit of a different animal in the sense that, you know, that was created through the federal government, but they do have to strike deals with the states. And often the states will do it, and in return, the Indian casinos will agree to give the states some form of money, even though they don't have to because it's a tax-exempt federal or sovereign land that they're on. But they give the states some money in return, sort of letting them get the agreement and move forward. And what happens is, even over time, and states are getting more and more into sort of trying to broaden it out into the commercial casinos that come in. Once anybody sort of gets the, you know, sort of proverbial camel's nose under the tent, it just keeps on escalating. So, you know, you bring in lotteries, and then you have more and more lotteries, and you bring in slot machines, and they turn into casinos. And then Pennsylvania is a classic example. The bill started out as a slots-only bill. First, it was going to help reduce property taxes. Then it was going to help seniors, and you know, then it was going to help protect the horse racing industry. It quickly morphed into full-blown commercial casinos, and we now have more casinos in Pennsylvania, more slot machines than in Atlantic City. And the state is, you know, basically, you know, stripping a lot of wealth from the very citizens that they're, again, like I said, they're supposed to be protecting.
Well, Paul, governments often play down or ignore the negative social effects of gambling, particularly casino gambling. What impact does casino gambling have, and you've mentioned a number of things, but particularly on criminal activity in areas surrounding a casino?
I mean, it's really outrageous what the governments do, and you're right, they play it down or they ignore it. And that's partly because the gambling industry have done a very good job of trying to paint gambling as this wholesome, good, clean, fun business. And so it was always sort of known as a sleazy, dirty business that was mobbed up. But, you know, they changed the name. It's no longer the gambling industry. It's now the gaming industry. And they fund studies, fund different professors, and they fund studies to try and mitigate and downplay the criminal element and also the problem gambling element, and say that there's only, you know, 1 or 3% of the people have a gambling problem. And that number may be true for the broad number of everybody in your state or the country, but it's not true for the people who come to the casino. And other studies have shown that the regular customers at the casino, anywhere from 30 to 60% have a gambling problem. And other studies show that where a casino opens, within a 50-mile radius, crime goes up anywhere from about 8 to 10%, and that every other bad statistic you can think of increases. Suicide goes up, divorce goes up, personal bankruptcy goes up, embezzlement goes up, and then take a look at Nevada, in particular, take a look at Las Vegas. They almost universally lead the country in almost all those statistics. If they're not number one, they're usually number two. Foreclosures, you name it, any of those things, any bad problem things that cost you something, they lead the state in. And so this is my other point about the gambling. While it brings in short-term tax revenue for the state, and I understand people say, well, I don't gamble, and if somebody wants to go gamble, it's their right, let them go gamble. And if they want to generate some tax money for me, then that's great. But what people don't understand, even if you don't go to the casino, all the problems that get introduced into the state from the casino, you ultimately will end up paying for as a taxpayer. Research has shown that basically for every dollar that the casino brings in, it creates about $3 in social and economic costs that are borne by the taxpayers, ultimately. So you destroy families, you raise increased crime, you cause more divorce, and we all pay for that, whether we go to the casino or not.
Well, Paul, we're dealing with that debate right here in North Carolina. We already have an Indian casino that's operated by the Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians in the western part of North Carolina, but now there is a Indian tribe that is based in South Carolina, the Catawba Indian Nation, that is seeking to establish a gambling casino right here in North Carolina, about 30 miles west of Charlotte on the North Carolina-South Carolina border. And as news of this broke a number of months ago, what we found is this whole casino project idea had been sold to the local community, the county government, the city government, the local chamber of commerce, and citizens as just an economic stimulus for a hurting or economically depressed community. And considering what you have said, that really would not add up to bringing a lot of revenue and prosperity to that area of the state. Would you agree with that?
100%. And casinos, again, you don't see them going to the sort of booming economies. You don't see them going to a place like Seattle, you know, that's got a booming economy filled with smart people and jobs that are growing. What you see casinos, the gambling industry do, whether it's an Indian casino, state-enabled casino, you name it, what they do is they pick out sort of second-tier and struggling cities, and they're desperate, right? They need jobs. Things are bleak. Nobody's coming around. And all of a sudden, they're going to offer you this glitzy casino. And everybody gets really excited and say, wow, we're going to get a casino in our town. And we're going to get casino jobs there. And you don't have to go real far, but take a look at all. And, you know, go to Detroit 10 years ago. Casinos, that was the cornerstone of their economic policy of to turn around that struggling city. And here we are 10 years later, largest city bankruptcy in the country. Casinos didn't help that city one bit. Atlantic City is the best case study around. 30 years of casinos, right? They had a monopoly up and down the entire East Coast. They owned the business. And it was enacted back in the late 70s, designed to transform a struggling seaside town. And, you know, I don't live too far from there. I spent some time in Atlantic City, and you go there, and there's 12 shiny casinos built there, and the rest of the town is a complete dump. And you know, I have to go a half a block or not even a block outside the casino. And there's payday lenders, cash for gold places, prostitutes, drug dealers. The town's unemployment rate is still double digits. The poverty rate has actually increased in the 30 years the casinos are there. So billions of dollars have been raised and spent in that town. And what's happened to it? There's been no turnaround in that town at all. Find me a place where a casino has opened and it's transformed the town to become an economically viable town. Hasn't happened. So it's really hard to argue. And just, if you think about it, just common sense, that your government is going to sort of now create an economic policy where the way to growth is to get people to gamble. I just don't understand how anybody with any logic, how that makes any sense to anybody. The gambling industry, the mantra that they use for slot machines is to get people to play to extinction. So is that really, you know, if you're an elected official, is that really who you want to team up with as your economic developer to turn around a struggling town, to bring in a business whose business model is get people to play to extinction? I mean, if you just think about that, it really, to me, drives me crazy that these are the elected officials and this is sort of the path that they're leading people down.
Paul, we're nearly out of time for this week. Where can our listeners go to learn more about the harms of government-sponsored gambling?
Well, our think tank, the Institute for American Values, has done this study that just came out in September called Why Casinos Matter. It's a pretty short and easy document that you can read that is a good collection and composite of all the sort of best studies and research that have been done both on casinos and lotteries. I'm welcome people to read my blog. I write about sort of gambling issues all over the country. It's called getgovernmentoutofgambling.org.
Well, and I will say that the North Carolina Family Policy Council has distributed the Why Casinos Matter report to a broad range of elected officials, particularly those down in Cleveland County, North Carolina, that are considering this Indian casino there. Let me repeat, Paul, for our listeners, the website, which is getgovernmentoutofgambling.org. Again, getgovernmentoutofgambling.org, and we would encourage them to avail themselves of the resources that can be found there. Paul Davies, thank you so much for being with us on Family Policy Matters and for the importance important work you are doing to draw attention to the harms of government-sponsored gambling nationwide.
Thanks for your time and interest. I really appreciate it.
Family Policy Matters is an information and analysis feature of the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Join us weekly for discussion on policy issues affecting the family. If you have questions or comments, please contact us at 919-807-0800 or visit our website at ncfamily.org.